Let's cross to the UK now. Matt Dathan is Home Affairs Editor at The Times. Hi, Matt.
Good morning.
In this long-running saga for the government, a migrant has now been relocated to Rwanda. What is the significance of this?
Yes, we learnt last night that the first migrant has been relocated to Rwanda, but it's actually part of a separate scheme to the much talked about deportation scheme. And the migrant who we have been told is a failed asylum seeker, had his asylum claim rejected at the end of last year in the UK. He's of African origin, but we don't know any more. He took up the offer of a £3,000 payment to move to Rwanda voluntarily. This sort of voluntary removal is quite common in terms of getting people to go back to their own countries. But it's the first time actually that a failed asylum seeker has been relocated to a third safe country. Must be very clear that this is very separate to the deportation scheme, which the government is just this week getting under operation, as I'm sure we'll talk about next.
Well, let's move on to that. What is happening with it? It has been a to and fro for so long. What stage are things at?
Yes, and this is a fast-moving, fast-developing operation now. For more than 2 years, since the announcement that Rwanda and the UK has agreed this forced deportation scheme to remove failed asylum seekers from the UK to Rwanda, and the Safety of Rwanda Bill that we've talked about many times on this show finally passed Parliament last week, and now the Home Office can finally start operationalising the policy for the first time in 2 years. And just today, we're late evening here in the UK. Today we had a briefing with the Home Office where they announced that they had detained the first migrants to go on that first flight to Rwanda due in July. And they took part in a 48-hour period of raids across the UK and all four nations of the United Kingdom, and they included women, but the government are not telling us how many, or even a rough figure for how many, because they say that giving any detail about the operation would undermine the ongoing raids that are taking place this week. But we understand it to be, you know, below 100, more in the sort of dozens of figures. But what Home Office officials made very clear today was that they will only have enough space to detain people in detention spaces. And so once they've filled up those spaces, and there's probably only about 500 available for the Rwanda deportees, they will then have to pause the policy. And they've also made very clear that they expect a load of legal challenges to come from these individuals in the coming weeks. So this is just the start of the implementation of the policy, but it is after a very long 2 years of legal battles and parliamentary battles about the policy.
How is this playing out politically?
Well, it's I think the Conservatives are for once sort of keeping their silence and sort of wanting to sit on their hands and wait and see how the policy is going to play out. You don't have the usual suspects of Suella Braverman, Robert Jenrick, and the right wing of the Tory party shouting from the sidelines, saying, why aren't the government doing this or that? Because finally, the government is starting to get people not on planes yet, but they're starting to get them into detention. So they want to sort of see how it goes. What is happening, however, the nerves in the Labour Party are starting to show. And today, the Labour Party made what we think is probably was quite a significant move, because they've said that they will, in government, if they win the election, they will effectively overturn the ban that the government brought in on people claiming asylum if they came to the UK illegally. So everyone who crosses in a small boat since July last year are barred from claiming asylum and ever actually being able to stay in the UK permanently. But this is creating a massive backlog of people who are stuck in limbo. They can't claim asylum, they can't gain permanent residence in the UK, but at the same time, UK government cannot remove them from the country. This government say that they will try and remove these people to Rwanda, but there are 90,000 people in that permanent backlog, so clearly not everyone is going to be sent to Rwanda. Labour Party obviously have pledged to scrap the Rwanda policy, so they don't have anywhere to send these people. And today they've made clear that they would actually scrap the government's ban on people claiming asylum and couldn't start considering these 90,000 claims. So overnight, you would in a Labour government have a suddenly a 90,000 extra asylum claims added to that backlog. So that's quite a significant move.
Speaking of it being election year, and obviously everyone's got their eyes on the polls, local election day tomorrow, there's talk that this could be very awkward for Rishi Sunak. Obviously, the Conservatives at the moment well behind.
Yes, that's right. The elections taking place tomorrow are going to be very important for signposting just how far the Conservatives have to go if they have any chance of winning the general election, which we expect in the autumn, but could be called this summer still. There are two key contests to look out for. So while there's a load of local election council elections across the UK, very important for the running of local councils, there are two mayoral elections which are really going to be the biggest signposts of how well or badly the Tories are doing. And that's the West Midlands mayoral election, and it's the Tees Valley election. And they're both currently held by Conservative mayors. But what's interesting in both those places is that those Conservative mayors have very much ditched the Conservative branding in all of their campaigning and are very much campaigning on their own record of being in power for the last few years. And Andy Street, who's the mayor of West Midlands, I think it's about 3 million voters. He is currently about 2 percentage points ahead in the poll, which is quite remarkable if you think about the fact that the Conservatives nationally under Rishi Sunak's leadership are running about 20 percentage points behind Labour. So if the Tories can win both those seats, then that will give Rishi Sunak hope that potentially running on a ticket that doesn't play into the Conservatives' record in government, but actually sells Rishi Sunak as a person, as an individual, that might give them a route to maybe not a victory, but possibly scraping through to a minority government. I think that's the best that they can hope for at this stage for the general election.
Can you just explain in more detail what's happening in the Scottish National Party and its leadership resignation?
Yes, a very good question. We've been watching fascination at what's happening in Holyrood. Tuomas Yousafzai, who's still the Scotland's first minister until the Scottish National Party elect a replacement, he resigned on Monday after he collapsed the power sharing agreement with the Green Party last week. And he's admitted, actually, in an interview with the BBC that. That it was a massive error of judgment on his part to collapse that deal with the Greens, which was collapsed because of disagreements over the government's green policies and transgender policies. So he's resigned, and now we look to another leader. And we think it's between John Swinney, who's a very experienced former leader of the SNP and former Deputy First Minister. He has not been in government the last year, so he has sort of distanced himself from the last year of chaos up there. And then you have Kate Forbes, who's the former finance minister, who's 34, but also quite a socially conservative in her views on things like gay marriage and transgender issues. So she might struggle to win over the support of the Green Party, which they need really to form a government there, because the SNP don't quite have a majority of MSPs. So it's going to be very interesting to watch how which leader they choose. Obviously, it might be a combination, and some do expect that John Swinney will take over as an effectively a caretaker until they go to the polls in the Scottish elections, I think, in 2 years' time.
All right, just a minute or so left. The King is officially back at work. There's been a lot of interest, obviously, in how his cancer treatment is going, and what is known, and how is the palace handling that?
Yes, he's been. It was yesterday. It was his first return to frontline public duties since his diagnosis in February. He's been continuing his job behind the scenes in terms of having his weekly meetings with the Prime Minister, for example, and signing papers, etc. All those important jobs he has, but the frontline jobs, which are obviously incredibly important, have been sidelined because of his illness. And he returned yesterday, and quite symbolically, he visited the University College Hospital at Macmillan Cancer Centre in London yesterday. And now that the palace feel that he's able to meet people in public safely for his own health. And he told patients there that it was a bit of a shock getting cancer, but the people who he met at the centre spoke of just how inspirational he has been in their own recovery, route to recovery from their own cancer diagnosis.
Thank you so much, Matt Dathan, who is Home Affairs Editor at The Times, our UK correspondent today.